Chapter 22. Way out, but with infinite loss to their reputation, like a sheep in a thick wood, that at every briar pulls some of the wool from her back, till she comes out in a most scandalous pickle of nakedness and scratches. The grandees immediately published 6 articles in vindication of the people's right, against the assumed privileges of the feathers, the abstract of which is as follows. 1. That the feathers had no right to claim, or make any new privileges for themselves, other than they had before. 2. That every freeman of the moon had a right to repel injury with law. 3. That imprisoning the 5 countrymen by the feathers was assuming a new privilege they had no right to, and a subjecting the subjects' right to their arbitrary votes. 4. That a writ of deliverance, or removing the body, is the legal right of every subject in the moon, in order to his liberty, in case of imprisonment. 5. That to punish any person for assisting the subjects in procuring or prosecuting the said writ of deliverance is a breach of the laws, and a thing of dangerous consequence. 6. That a writ of follies is not a grace, but a right, and ought not to be denied to the subject. These resolves struck the languishing reputation of the feathers with a dead palsy, and they began to stink in the nostrils of all the nations in the moon. But besides this, they had one strange effect, which was a prodigious disappointment to the men of the feather. I had observed before that there was to be a new set of feathers, provided in order to building another consolidator, according to a late law for a new engine every 3 years. Now several of these men of the feather, who thought their feathers capable of serving again, had made great interest, and been at great cost, to have their old feathers chosen again, but the people had entertained such scoundrel opinions of these proceedings, such as tacking, consolidating, imprisoning electors, impeaching without trial, writs of follies and the like, that if anyone was known to be concerned in any of these things, nobody would vote for him. The gentlemen were so mortified at this, that even the oddest high church solitarian of them all, if he put in any, were to be re-chosen, the first thing he had to do, was to assure the people he was no tacker, none of the 134, and a vast deal of difficulty they had to purge themselves of this blessed action, which they assumed to value themselves on before, as their glory and merit. Thus they grew ashamed of it as a crime, got men to go about to vouch for them to the country people, that they were no tackers, nay, one of them to clear himself loudly forswore it, and taking a glass of wine wished it might never pass through him, if he was a tacker, though all men suspected him to be of that number too, he having been one of the forwardest, that way on all occasions, of any person among the south folk of the moon. In like manner, one of the feathers for the middle province of the country, who was said to think it his honor to be for the qualifying law, seeing which way the humor of the country ran, took as much pains now to tell the people he was no tacker, as he did before, to promise them that he would do his utmost to have the Crowleyans redacted, and that bill to pass, the reason of which was plain, that he saw, if it should be known he was a tacker, he should never have his feather returned, to be put into the consolidator. The heats and feuds that the feathers and the grandees were now run into began to make the latter very uneasy, and they sent to the grandees to hasten them, and put them in mind of passing some laws they had sent up to them for raising money, and which lay before them, knowing that as soon as those laws were passed, the queen would break them up, and they being very willing to be gone, before these things came too far upon the stage, urged them to dispatch. But the grandees resolving to go thorough with the matter, sent to them to come to a treaty on the foot of the 6 articles, and to bring any reasons they could, to prove the power they had to act as they had done with the countrymen, and with the lawyers they had put in prison for assisting them. The feathers were very backward and stiff about this conference or treaty, till at last the grandees having sufficiently exposed them to all the nation, the bills were passed, the grandees caused the particulars to be printed, and a representation of their proceedings, and the feathers' foul dealings to the queen of the country, and so her majesty sent them home. But if they were ashamed of being called tackers before, they were doubly mortified at this now. Nay, the country resented it so exceedingly, that some of them began to consider whether they should venture to go home or no. Printed lists of their names were published, though we do not say they were true lists, for it was a hard thing to know which were true lists and which were not, nor indeed could a true list be made, no man being able to retain the exact account of who were the men in his memory. For as there were 134 tackers, so there were 141 of these, who by a name of distinction were called Le Bessir name, in English Aylesbury men. The people were so exasperated against these, that they expressed their resentment upon all occasions, and lest the queen should think that the nation approved the proceedings, they drew up a representation or complaint, full of most dutiful expressions to their queen, and full of resentment against the feathers, the copy of which being handed about the moon the last time I was there, I shall take the pains to put it into English in the best manner I can, keeping as near the original as possible. If any man shall now wickedly suggest that this relation has any retrospect to the affairs of England, the author declares them malicious misconstruers of his honest relation of matters from this remote country, and offers his positive oath for their satisfaction, that the very last journey he made into those lunar regions, this matter was upon the stage, of which, if this treatise was not so near its conclusion, the reader might expect a more particular account. If there is any analogy or similitude between the transactions of either world, he cannot account for that. His application makes the yes. And yet sometimes he has thought, as some people fable of the Platonic ear, that after such a certain revolution of time, all things are transacted over again, and the same people live again, are the same fools, knaves, philosophers and madmen they were before, though without any knowledge of, or retrospect to what they acted before. So why should it be impossible, that as the moon and this world are noted before to be twins and sisters, equal in motion and in influence, and perhaps in qualities, the same secret power should so act them, as that like actions and circumstances should happen in all parts of both worlds at the same time? I leave this thought to the improvement of our royal learned societies of the antique cacophonums, opposotions, periodicarians, and tepredestinarians, universal Saulians, and such like unfathomable people, who, without question, upon mature enquiry will find out the truth of this matter. But if anyone shall scruple the matter of fact as I have here related it, I freely give him leave to do as I did, and go up to the moon for a demonstration. And if upon his return he does not give ample testimony to the case in every part of it, as here related, I am content to pass for the contriver of it myself, and be punished as the law shall say I deserve. Nor was this all the public matters, in which this nation of Salianarians took wrong measures. For about this time, the misunderstandings between the southern and northern men began again, and the Salianarians made several laws, as they called them, to secure themselves against the dangers they pretended might accrue from the new measures the Salianarians had taken. But so unhappily were they blinded by the strife among themselves, and by set by opinion and interest, that every law they made, or so much as attempted to make, was really to the advantage, and to the interest of the northern men, and to their own loss. So ignorantly and weak-headed was these high Salianarian churchmen in the true interest of their country, led by their implacable malice at Crowleyanism, which as is before noted, was the established religion of that country. But as this matter was but transacting, when I took the other remarks, and that I did not obtain a full understanding of it. Till my second voyage, I refer to a more full relation of my farther travels that way, when I shall not fail to give a clear state of the debate of the two kingdoms, in which the southern men had the least reason, and the worst success, that ever they had in any affair of that nature for many years before. It was always my opinion in affairs on this side the moon, that though sometimes a foolish bolt may hit the point, and a random shot kill the enemy, yet that generally discretion and prudence of management had the advantage, and met with a proportionate success, fine things were, or were not happy, in their conclusion as they were, more or less wisely contrived and directed. And though it may not be allowed to be so here, yet I found it more constantly so there. Effects were true to their causes, and confusion of counsels never failed in the moon, to be followed by distracted and destructive consequences. This appeared more eminently in the dispute between these two lunar nations we are speaking of. Never were people in the moon, whatever they might be in other places, so divided in their opinions about a matter of such consequence. Some were for declaring war immediately upon the northern men, though they could show no reason at all why, only because they would not do as they would have 'em. A parcel of poor scoundrel, scabby rogues, they ought to be made submit. What? Won't they declare the same king as we do? Hang them rogues! A pack of Crowleian Priestarian devils, we must make them do it, down with them the shortest way, declare war immediately, and down with them. Nay, some were for falling on them directly, without the formality of declaring war. Others, more afraid than hurt, cried out invasions, depredation, fire, and sword, the northern men would be upon them immediately, and proposed to fortify their frontiers, and file off their forces to the borders. Nay, so apprehensive did those men of prudence pretend to be, that they ordered towns to be fortified 100 miles off of the place, when all this, while the poor northern men did nothing but tell them, that unless they would come to terms, they would not have the same king as they, and they took some measures, to let them see they did not purpose, to be forked to it. Another sort of wiser men than these, proposed to unite with them, hear their reasons, and do them right. These indeed were the only men that were in the right method of concluding this unhappy broil, and for that reason, were the most unlikely to succeed. But the wildest notion of all was, when some of the grandees made a grave address to the queen of the country, to desire the northern men to settle matters first, and to tell them that when that was done, they should see what these would do for them. This was a home stroke, if it had but hit, and the misfortune only lay in this, that the northern men were not fools enough. The clearness of the air in those cold climates generally clearing the head so early, that those people see much farther into a millstone than any blind man in all the southern nations of the moon. There was another unhappiness in this case, which made the matter yet more confused, and that was, that the soldiers had generally no gust to this war. This was an odd case, for those sort of gentlemen, especially in the world in the moon, don't use to inquire into the justice of the case they fight for, but they reckon it is their business to go where they are sent, and kill anybody they are ordered to kill, leaving their governors to answer for the justice of it. But there was another reason to be given why the men of the sword were so averse, and always talked coldly of the fighting part, and though the northern men call it a fear, yet I cannot join with them in that, for to fear requires thinking, and some of our Salianarians are absolutely protected from the first, because they never meddle with the last, except when they come to the engine, and therefore 'tis plain it could not proceed from fear. It has puzzled the most discerning heads of the age to give a reason from whence this aversion proceeded, and various judgments have been given of it. The Nullianarians jested with them, and when they talked of fighting, bade them look back into history, and examine what they ever made of a Nullianarian war, and whether they had not been often well beaten, and sent short home, bit them have a care of catching a tartar, as we call it, and always made themselves merry with it. They bantered the Salianarians too, about the fears and terrors they were under, from their arming themselves, and putting themselves in a posture of defense, when it was easy to see by the nature of the thing, that their design was not a war, but a union upon just conditions, that it was a plain token, that they designed either, to put some affront upon the Nullianarians, to deny them some just claims, or to impose something very provoking upon them more than they had yet done, that they were so exceeding fearful of an invasion from them. Though these were sufficient to pass for reasons in other cases, yet it could not be so here, but I saw there must be something else in it. As I was thus wondering at this unusual backwardness of the soldiers, I inquired a little farther into the meaning of it, and quickly found the reason was plain. There was nothing to be got by it, that people were brave, desperate and poor, the country barren, mountainous, and empty, so that in short there would be nothing but blows, and soldiers' fellows to be had, and I always observed, that soldiers never care to be knocked on the head, and get nothing by the bargain. In short, I saw plainly the reasons, that prompted the Salianarians to insult their neighbors of the north, were more derived from the regret at their establishing Crowleyanism, than at any real causes they had given, or indeed were in a condition to give them. These, and abundance more particular observations I made, but as I left the thing still in agitation, and undetermined, I shall refer to another voyage which I purpose to make thither, and at my return, may perhaps set that case in a clearer light than our sight can yet bear to look at it in. If in my second voyage I should undeceive people in the notions they entertained of those northern people, and convince them that the Salianarians were really the aggressors, and had put great hardships upon them, I might possibly do a work that, if it met with encouragement, might bring the Salianarians to do them justice, and that would set all to rights. The two nations might easily become one, and unite forever, or at least become friends, and give mutual assistance to each other. And I cannot but own such an agreement would make them both very formidable, but this I refer to another time. At the same time I cannot leave it without a remark, that this jealousy between the two nations may perhaps in future ages be necessary to be maintained, in order to find some better reasons for fortifications, standing armies, guards, and garrisons than could be given in the reign of the great prince I speak of, the queen's predecessor, though his was against foreign insulting enemy. But the temper of the Salianarian high party was always such, that they would with much more case give thanks for a standing army against the Nullianarians and Crowleyans, than agree to one legion. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.